Maybe you're not sure of what to say next, or you weren't paying as much attention to the conversation as you should. So the ums and the uhs and you knows come out of your mouth to delay for a few seconds. These so-called crutch words can emerge in the lightest or heaviest of situations, like when White House Chief of Staff John Kelly fired Omarosa Manigault Newman.
We've got to talk to you about leaving the White House. It's come to my attention over the last few months that there's been some pretty, in my opinion, significant integrity issues. I think it's important to understand that if we make this a friendly departure, we can all be, you know, you can look at your time here in the White House as a year of service to the nation, and then you can go on without any type of difficulty in the future relative to your reputation.
How distracting are those filler words, and how do we get away from using them so often? The company Quantified Communications analyzed more than 4,000 communication samples to determine how much speakers rely on crutch words and how audiences perceive them. And the company's CEO, Noah Zandan, is with me via Skype to talk about what he learned. Noah, what is going on with these filler words, and what happens in our minds to bring them about?
Our brains operate four times faster than our mouths. And so when we speak, most of us have learned to do things with our mouths that allow behaviors to kind of catch up and try to sync those two processes that operate independently. And so most of us, when we speak, unless it's a completely memorized piece of content, are forced to think and speak at different speeds. And what that does is creates disfluencies, which is the academic term for filler words or crutch words, that cause people to say things like, so, you know, and other things that we rely on to give our brains a second to sync with our what we're saying.
And how do those disfluencies affect how other people view us, whether as communicators or level of intelligence?
Like anything with communicating, first, you want to actually see them. They make us human. And so it's been interesting to watch all of the new kind of vocal technologies that are coming out. They're adding disfluencies to the technology and to the scripts because it makes it sound more relatable and more human. That said, when you study the way that people communicate, everything really points to don't do things that are so obvious that they are distracting. And so if every third word out of my mouth is you're just going to start thinking about how much I say and you're probably going to start counting it on a piece of paper instead of listening to what I'm talking about. So there's a fine line between a small amount that make you sound human and relatable and real and too many that make it a distraction.
Now, if we choose to take pauses, as some people have recommended, if people are not used to hearing pauses, if they're used to hearing those crutch words instead, is that an adjustment for the audience as well?
Audiences want time to process things. And, you know, the ideal rate of speaking that we've studied is around 150, 160 words per minute. People don't want you to speak faster than that because they want time to digest. And a pause is a wonderful thing to give people, first, an understanding that you're a confident speaker and you're comfortable owning that moment. And second, it's time for them to catch up and think about what you're saying and actually ingest it and process it.
How much have we been trained to sort of fill those voids, those moments of silence? People will say with someone they're really connected to, it was almost as though we could sit there quietly and it wouldn't matter. We were still sort of communicating in some sense. But it also feels as though in this other way, we are intending to fill up the silence. Now, in radio, we have to do that. In conversation, we don't really have to, but we end up doing it. Why do you think we do that?
We're all so in tune with social signals. I have an 18-month-old son, and it's amazing to watch him catch, even at that age, the social signals of interaction. And you meet someone new, there's nothing more awkward than no conversation. You know, that weird smile or the exchange of nonverbal. But over time, as you relate to people more and you understand them more, you're comfortable being quiet. I know an amazing presenter is a New York Times reporter, and he challenges himself every time he's on stage on how long he can take a pause because he feels like that's owning his moment and owning his audience. And really good speakers are comfortable. They know how to use those pauses to actually take someone and have them understand that you're a comfortable communicator, you're a confident communicator, and you don't need to insert awkward, unnecessary language into the conversation.
Were you ever an ummer yourself?
Absolutely. I'm not an ummer, I'm a sower. And I have the same problem. I use so, and the more uncomfortable I am, the more you hear it.
I think one of the great things in radio is so often we hear, that's a great question. And from an ego standpoint, we love hearing that, but we often think that's a delaying tactic or crutch phrase as well.
5 years ago, used to train everybody to do that, and now it's a noticed thing. And that's really what we see as we look at communication trends is over time, people evolve and they evolve their expectations. TED is such a wonderful example of lifting the expectations for public speaking. And you go watch those good TED Talks, there's not a lot of fillers in them. And they've really upped the level and upped the expectation for communication for all audiences.
Well, let's talk some specifics. What are some steps to really make people stop using these crutch words?
Awareness. So it's really hard to stop doing something if you're not aware that you do it. Assuming that you start to understand how often do you use crutch words, which you can measure, and what are those crutch words? It's really about identifying different ways to train your brain to use a pause instead of the crutch word. Sometimes that's a breath. We have a gentleman on our sales team here on our team that when he feels like he's about to use a crutch word, you actually see him, and he only does this over the phone, he doesn't do it in person. He'll actually grab his mouth and take a very, very permanent pause. And so it's awareness, and then it's training your body behavior to stop, take a pause, be comfortable, embrace the silence, and then over time you start to make that behavior a habit.
How do we then use crutch words in a proper sense and not almost be crippled by them ourselves? The idea that we are thinking about them too much.
I guess the best analogy there is kind of like a golf swing, where you want to be aware of the different behaviors and patterns of human movement to be effective. But when it becomes so consciously aware that you're working on them, you start to lose the natural ability to do them. It's something that you really need to work on and train in order to become more natural about lessening the number of disfluencies and distractions in your communication.
Noah Zandan is CEO of Quantified Communications.